Welcome to the Wise Women Diaries podcast. This is where shame and victimhood die. I am a woman that questions everything, so this podcast is a reflection of that. Here, we speak on non-mainstream perspectives, like how children are the biggest teachers, how to turn pain to wisdom, and the journey of learning to trust ourselves. We discuss what it looks like to own our power as a woman and question the medical paradigm. That's why I am obsessed with interviewing women who trust their bodies and babies in home birth and free birth. Ultimately, this podcast is for women who question the status quo, but are dedicated to thriving and learning how to take radical responsibility for their life and shed victimhood for good.
I am Léa Couture. I am a French Canadian and I am a mom of two little boys. Two boys that were born at home, unassisted birth. And I am a stepmom of a big 7 years old girl. I work as a birth worker, mostly consultant right now. I decided not to go to birth anymore, mostly because of my birth experiences. And I also do photography, so I'm a photographer, mostly around pregnancy and families. So I'm a documentary photographer. And my entry in motherhood came with the meeting of my partner, which is Gabrielle. So we met, and after 5 months together, we decided to conceive our first son. So I came back from Burning Man, and I was like, let's have a baby now. So our son was conceived pretty much a day or two after making this crazy, fun decision. We could talk about that decision making on a full episode, so we won't go there. So I was already into the birth world because I was in photography studying to photograph mostly births. So I didn't allow myself to be in the birth world because I didn't feel I was legitimate enough to do so. So when I got pregnant, it was obvious that I would train myself as a birth worker, as a doula. So I did that. And I had a midwife here in Quebec. It's in the system, within the system. There's no midwife outside of the system. So it's really regulated. It's only licensed medical midwives. So we had this follow-up with a midwife, with a team of midwife in the system for my first son. And my partner already had birth experiences before with his older partner. So he had his own experiences, and that was a good and a bad thing for me in a certain way, because he had his own thoughts around birth and own expectations. So we went from, we should have birth at the birth center, and then I want a birth at home. And then I trained with WAPIO during a weekend. I discovered WAPIO, and then the week after I learned that she was in Montreal, so I went straight to her training. And then after that training, it was just obvious that if I wanted to experience the birth that I wanted, I needed to stay at home. And at that time, midwives were not allowed to go at home births because they were licensed midwife in the system. And it was the big COVID thing. So that was one of the best gifts that I received, because it was a way to see that the midwives in the system had their hands tied completely. So I ended up hiring two doulas that were sharing the calls and their presence at birth. And at some point I told them that I wanted to give birth at home and asked them if they were comfortable with that. And they agreed to stay with me and be there if I wanted them to be there. So my first son, Arlo, was born on June 21st in a sort of sweat lodge room that was way too hot in a big, warm canicule that we say in French in my Montreal apartment. It was an exhausting, long birth that I can now see in a different way after experiencing my second birth. So, as I sometimes say, it's not because it's free birth that everything is easy and fun. And sometimes you're more in your mind than if someone's saving you in a certain way. So it was exhausting and magical at the same time, but really, really painful. I had made the decision not to have anyone monitor anything, so even I didn't know how long my contractions were. I had just no idea, which was the best gift I could have given myself. So Arlo was born at home, and I was in my bed for at least a week without being able to move, because I was in pain and just injured from that experience, I would say. So that was my first birth experience, unassisted, free birth, medically unassisted, and free birth at home. So that's how I launched myself into the birth world. And since I had trained as a doula, then family came to me for guidance through free birth. And I sort of got specialized in that as a birth worker. And then I had the opportunity to witness birth and to see what my presence could bring as a good and as a bad in a certain way. So I was really aware of all of that. And the last birth that I attended, I was just at the end of the corridor and the baby was born in the bathroom with her parents. And that was the best. And then the birth before that, I came and picked up their older son, just left. And then they called me when the placenta needed to come out. And they just wanted to have a presence there. So for me, that is an amazing way to hold and witness birth. And then we decided to conceive our second son. And at that time, it was clear for me that I didn't want to have any follow-ups with a midwife or with a doctor or anyone. I didn't do a single test, a pregnancy test at the beginning. So that completely changed my perception of my body and my experience, because I didn't give power to something outside of my body to tell me what wasn't happening inside. I wish I would have sustained that vision or thinking, but I made the choice at some point to go to the emergency room to hear the heartbeat. I not panicked, but I felt the urge to hear my baby's heartbeat around 11, 12 weeks. And then when I heard it, I was like, okay, I'm out of here. And I had this strong intuition that I had twins. So that stayed during my pregnancy, which was unassisted from the system, except from that experience to go to the emergency room. And then this twin situation was so strong for me and so stressful for me, and I couldn't just let go. And there's a part of me that kind of feel ashamed of it, but I think that was my way of staying in control in a certain way. And I ended up going to the emergency room a second time around 20 weeks to see if I had twins with a scan. It was the most ridiculous and pathetic thing, kind of. But I think I learned so much from that experience, even as a birth worker, because I really experienced what the families I would work with experienced in the system. And then I learned about the lost twin So I think what I experienced is that I actually had a twin, and then at 12 weeks, my urge to hear the heartbeat was so strong. Then I heard it, and I was like, well, I thought my baby died, so how come is there a heartbeat? Yeah, so I think that there was an actual twin that was either absorbed by the body, and there's an amazing book about that, that it's called The Lost Twin. So for me, I don't know if righteousness is the right word, but this strong feeling that I had twins was just so strong, and everyone around me just thought I had twins. That's what I was emanating, you know? So when I was told that there was only one baby, it kind of didn't make sense, but now I was clear. So the first time I went into the emergency room, I was in fear because I thought my baby died. I had this strong connection that it was over. And I was stressed. And I was afraid because I didn't have any follow-ups. So the energy that I came in was in fear, in a really low frequency, and had a really bad experience with the doctor that was present. And then the second time, I made the choice to go to the emergency room in my power, aware of what I wanted to come to get. I wanted to have a scan. And it was really clear for me. I wanted no measure, no photos, nothing. So I walk into the emergency room, and I had these like breathing moment in my car. And I was like, okay, you are allowed to do this. And you're going in your power. So my experience was completely different. And I waited, and then the nurse at the triage, you know, when you come in, was like mind blown. She was like, you don't have any doctor following you? Like, no. It's my second birth. My first son was born at home. Everything was fine. But she just couldn't pick it up. It was just like a glitch. And I think that was just so funny. And she was like repeating, like if my answer would be different. I was like, yeah, no doctor. Okay, but you gave birth at home and you didn't have an hemorrhage? I was like, no, that doesn't happen every time, you know? It doesn't. So that started like that. And then they just didn't know where to put me. I was like, I just want a scan. And I cannot have a scan in Quebec without prescription. I can't even do it on my own in a private. I need a prescription from a doctor. And I didn't feel comfortable going to my family doctor that have been following me for a long time. I hadn't seen her. She was not comfortable with me having a midwife the first time. So I didn't want to go see her and say, hey, I'm pregnant and I'm going to, again, give birth on my own at home. So I ended up, the emergency that I went to was in another region. So I figured they wouldn't like follow me up, and I could say that I will get a follow-up in my region. So that started with that nurse. And then they just transferred my case to the maternity department. And then they put me in that room that was at that time still, they still had like some tapes on the windows and on the cracks because it was an anti-patients with COVID or without the vaccine would go if they gave birth. So I was just sitting in that room and they were like, put this robe on. And that doesn't make sense for me. So I didn't put the robe on and I just sat there. And I was in this room and I just couldn't imagine that people give birth in that room. That was a glitch for me. It was like a big realization of, wow, this is still happening. And then all I wanted was someone to, this outside authority to tell me that I only had one baby or two babies. And you could see that the doctor, like, they don't know how to touch the baby and to know the baby positions. They just do scans all the time. And I was like, we don't need to go to the scan if you can tell me there's two of them. But she just wanted to do the scan because that was a security for her and that she could add some data to her calculating thing and protocols and numbers. So she gave me a prescription so that I could get a scan 2 days later. So I left. But she was mean. She wasn't nice. That's okay. I was in my power. I was comfortable with that. And then 2 days later, I came back to the hospital to get the scan. And I had these doubts, you know, I felt guilty, like scans don't make sense for me for so many reasons. And I felt like I had failed in some way not to be able to connect with, but that's something else. So I end up going to the scan, and lately I've been saying that doctors are the new, like, priesters, or like, you know, it's like the new religion, sort of. And then the technician came in, and his name was Pastor. And I was just laughing. I was like, no way, this is there a camera somewhere? Like, this is a joke. Like, this is so funny. And they just didn't understand because I didn't want to have any measures, any pictures. And I could see, as soon as I saw there was only one baby, I was like, okay, stop. And he was like, no, maybe it's hidden in the back. And I was like, no, I'm like 23 weeks pregnant. If there is a second baby, you're going to see it right now. Well, that was my belief. And I just stopped it. But again, they just didn't know what to do. They didn't understand. And I just left. So that was a little glimpse into my birth experience.
I do like that you speak to feeling like you failed connecting to your body because you chose to have a scan, because these are real human emotions that come up once we know the real risks of things. That's we can't not know those risks now. So for you, for example, you know the risks of ultrasound. You know, you also can set yourself up for them telling you that your baby has XYZ condition, and they can literally lead you into like a rabbit hole of diagnosis and fear that you weren't looking for. So there's risk associated, you know, doing this scan. And a lot of women might not understand, how could you feel like you failed, or how could you feel guilty for having a scan? But there's a lot of women that understand that, because there's a lot of women that have now learned all of the risks associated with all of these interventions, and we have to hold the risk versus benefit. And that's what mothers hold, is choosing for themselves the risk versus benefit. And there's a lot of emotion and there's a lot of complexity sometimes with that. And so you're just speaking to this other end of the spectrum of a human woman's experience of once she knows the medical system. And I love that you spoke to it, because that's what your reality was. And that's what your story is. And I'm sure other women have felt this. So thank you.
Yes, and the morning before I went to the hospital for the scan, I was walking and trying to figure it out if this was the right thing to do. And then I was walking near my parents' house, and then I looked to my left, and there was a deer that just showed up in between some leaves. And it looked at me, and then I think I kept walking, and he like disappeared, and then he showed up again. And it kind of looks like he was laughing. It was laughing. And then it hid again. So it was like playing with me. And I felt like this was my sign of, you can do this as it can be, you're playing. There's a tool. And now you just build up this whole story around this birth and those twins that might not be, and it's just a game. And all of this is just a game. And then I looked at the deer and just smiled. And I said, thank you. Thank you so much. This is just a game. We're just going to peek. And you know, the deer was like peeking and then hid and then came back. We're just going to peek and I can do it my own way. And that's it. And then I just kept walking, and that was right before going.
I love that so much because we are humans, but we have a soul. And so we are both things. That's the point of the human experience, is this duality of we are a soul, and you know, we might have our values of trust and connection and intimacy and speaking and seeking truth and honesty. But we're also a human, and we have our mind that's consumed with safety, that's consumed with worry and fear and the need to know. And we are, as humans, oscillating between human, soul, human, soul, mind, soul, mind, soul. And that's the game of life, is that that's what we are. And so dabble in human, dabble in soul. Like, it is a game. It's this duality of our darkness and our light. And the more acceptance we have that we are humans and we are a soul and we get to experience both, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. That's why we're here. We're here to experience that human spectrum.
Yep. It's pretty powerful. And when you're pregnant and you, everything is just so more sensitive, like the guilt is worse and the shame is worse and the joy is expanded as well. So that was kind of my story. And I was so happy to just close this twin story and then reopen it postnatal, because I learned about the lost twin, and my baby had some issues with his skin. And then for me, it just explained everything that I experienced during my pregnancy about the twin situation. But I was able to close it for the end of the pregnancy and to experience being pregnant without anyone waiting for me to do anything, any appointment. I was in this place where I wasn't even sure of my due date, and like, I don't even like that word, but I didn't really know, and I didn't really care, because that was not important for me. You know, for my first birth, if you would have given me a midwife, hands off, out of the system, I would have taken her. But for this one, no, not at all. And then at the end of my pregnancy, Yolande from Freebird Society created that course, Portal. And I bought it. And it kind of reminded me when I first took the book from Laura Kaplan Chenley, and I rented the book for my first pregnancy, and I opened it, and I was expecting a guide, you know, with like images and what to do and what not to do, and it was just words. And I was like, fuck. It's all in my head. Like, there's no recipe. No one's gonna show me how to do this. It is all in my head. That means I need to do the work to be able to give myself the experience and let go of what I want to do. And if I want to give birth on my own, then I need to deconstruct and reconstruct, reprogram something new. So I bought Portal, and it's not about birth in a certain way. So it consolidated all of my knowledge, new beliefs that I had synced in from the year prior. And it was all presented according to birth, but she didn't really talk about birth so much. So I had already read the victim triangle. And I had already bought it to all of my family members and my partner. And it already had changed my life. But then I could apply this to my previous birth and then make changes for my second birth. So that was a big game changer for me. And I had decided, I was questioning a lot the presence of my partner or anyone at birth. And then I deconstructed a lot of elements from my first birth and really wondered if everything was so painful because I needed that pain to relate to anyone else. And just because that's what I thought I deserved at that time, you know?
I have a question. I want you to explain what you felt about the victim triangle in regards to your first birth.
I think I really understood where I placed myself in the triangle after my second birth. So I thought I had figured out in between those two births. But mostly I think that the fact that I had someone else witness that birth, and I had my partner at the time witness, which is the same partner, my partner witnessing the birth. And to have all of this attention, all those eyes, which were not a lot compared to a hospital birth, taking care of me and massaging me for hours and hours and hours and being the center of attention. And I think that's exactly what I needed, and I'm so grateful for the presence, for their presence at that birth. But I knew I wanted something different for my second birth, and we had made the decision that it would be our last baby, so there was also this is going to be my last time. How can I make the most out of it, you know? So all that to say that I ended up telling my partner, I think I want to tell our doula that I don't want to see her. I want her to be there for the kids. And if I want to see her, I want to say it. Like, don't just assume that she's going to come in the room. But it was a safety for me to know that she was around because she's a woman really close to my heart. And she trusts birth deeply. And I think that's what we need around birth. So I told my partner, I will take my courage and I will tell her. And I remember he said, but you can't take that away from her. That's the best part of it. And I said, see, that's exactly why I have to do this. Because I don't want to be the people pleaser anymore. I do not have to give this experience to anyone. I mean, it is a nice gift. It is amazing. It is magical. But that belongs to me. And I want to leave that people pleasing, and that is a great opportunity for me to do that. And I knew she would be fine with it, but I still had this inside of me, fear, you know, of, well, that's kind of the trophy of the birth worker, you know, to be present at the birth. And I was deconstructing that as a birth worker myself, so I felt like I needed to apply it, and I deserved it. So that was a big part. And then I had also mentioned to my partner that I wanted to be alone most of it, again, unless I felt the need for him to be present. And I also really deconstructed the presence of my kids. So I realized that I wanted to give that to my stepdaughter, but that was my ego wanting to give it to her. Because I felt it was such an amazing experience, and it would probably be your only opportunity to do that and to have this programming of home birth and free birth and unassisted birth, and that you also have this power in you. But I don't want to give birth in my ego. So this whole realization of, why do I want people to be there? What does it ignite in me? And then, is it my way for me to sabotage my experience? So I was in this whole thinking, and then we didn't do that for the first birth, but for the second birth, we were really into asking ourselves questions of what we would do if there was something that would go wrong. It's not the right word, but if anything was not going according to normal. So I had really let go. I didn't know if my baby would be alive. And it's easy to say that I was okay with it. Like, I will never know if I would have been okay with it. But we had positioned ourselves in what we would do if that occurred. For our first baby, it was clear. If something happens, we call the emergency. And that's it. We go to the hospital. But for that bird, I could not imagine having this moment, this ritual with our potentially dead baby being interrupted by someone from the state. Like, that was, I could not imagine that. And do I really want to have a baby that is being resuscitated for like 50 minutes? Because that happens. And then, does that make sense to me? Does that make sense to us? What are the risks? What are the consequences of that? What is my position on that? So that was a way for us. Like, this maybe might be alive. We might have a baby. We might not have a baby. And that's another little thing about the twin situation, is that Oslo was transverse for this 3 months remaining. And I think that's also because he probably was leaving space for his or her twin. As much as this transverse situation was stressing me sometimes, during birth, I didn't think about it at all. So this also is linked with not being afraid and just knowing that what needs to happen will happen, and not being in the fear. So if we fast forward to the birth.
I have a question first. Also, I just love how deep this conversation is. I am here for these deep conversations, because this is how deep I go. And I love that both of our names are Leah, and we both can go this deep. But I have a question about Yolanda's, I don't know, you say Yolande, I say Yolanda, I don't know how to say her name correctly, who knows, whatever. Yolanda Norris Clark has that book in class, Portal, and I have read the book, and I think it's the best birth book there is, because it's about consciousness. And if you aren't conscious, you will not understand the book. It will not make sense to you. And so I'm assuming that her course was a course about consciousness, about being aware, about being truly aware of your thoughts, your connection with your body sensations, your beliefs, your fears, your interactions, your relationships, everything, being aware of everything about your life. I want you to explain what you learned from her course in a little recap for people that might not have any idea. I know I just explained it, but it is a course about our relationship with pain and our relationship with pleasure, because it's so beautiful. And Yolanda had maybe 8 births that were very painful, and then her 9th and 10th I think were orgasmic, pain-free, blissful, and she explains how she got there. And it's just this inner internal process. And the things I resonated with were, I don't know if this was explicitly in the book, but it's what I gleaned from the book, is that can women receive an orgasmic birth? Most women can't. Most women have low self-worth. Most humans have low self-worth, and we don't believe we deserve to have the most ecstatic, astounding birth. Most of us believe we deserve pain and we deserve suffering. And a lot of us have stories of being a woman, that being a woman is about pain and about suffering. So what else can you speak to your journey with that course or what you learned from it? I know you did just discuss your reflections from your first birth based on this course, but anything else you want to speak to it?
As I said, I think it's everything that she was teaching, I had already touched on it in the year prior. And she started the course with a quote from Greg Braden, I don't know how to say it, from The Divine Matrix. And I just went straight and bought it and devoured it. That book, I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't.
The Divine Matrix by Greg Braden. So it explains our whole reality. And then when you understand that, and you understand that I had this consciousness of I create my reality, but it wasn't clear if it was like co-creation, and I was still in this space where, like, I didn't create this situation. I am not responsible for this. So it was a consolidation of, okay, I create all of this because I still need to learn from all of this. And I have the power to elevate myself, and I have the power to sabotage myself. And I think that's what came out for me. And it was just this reminder of all of this new knowledge, and I needed to integrate it. And I had the opportunity to do it for this birth. And Oslo's birth, like, I will explain how it went and what, because it was not like a psychedelic experience. I was really in my mind, but I think that's what I needed to experience this. So I think I'll keep going with the birth story. So that night I went to bed and I said, baby, just let me sleep an hour because I'm tired, and then you can come. And we kind of laughed with my partner. And then I slept a couple of hours, and then I woke up around midnight. And I knew it was coming. It was starting. So I went upstairs to the bathroom. My partner was cleaning everything up because he knew this new transition in our life needed a clean space. And I think that was his way of guarding the space and staying kind of away from me, which is what I wanted. And my son woke up. He was 2.5 at that time. So I was in the bathroom, and then I spent a good amount of time looking at myself in the mirror. And I think there is something really strong about that. You know, I remember being a kid and just crying and being in a crisis and looking at myself in the mirror, and just like, it was just worse. And I was like, ah! So it's kind of this way of looking in yourself and like either bringing something really stronger or softer. But anyway, in that moment, I was looking at myself in the mirror, and it was like the window to my soul and the window to my sensations. And then my partner and my son went to bed to get together. So I was alone and just went downstairs. So that was maybe for like 20 minutes. And then I went downstairs and I had this futon bed next to my bed. in front of the fireplace, and I had this big scarf strapped so that I could hold on to it and still be on the futon bed on the ground and hold on to that scarf. And I just figured it was so soft and I needed to rest because my first experience was just so intense and intensity would come at some point. So it was better if I would just rest. So I was laying on my right side. I feel like I was sleeping from like 5 to 10 minutes and then had another waves. And it was just so soft and I didn't really understand the softness. So I just figured it was just starting. And then at some point, the sensations became, I would say, painful. And I realized that it's at the moment that I started thinking about this friend of a friend who I had met the summer before, who had shared a really traumatic experience with me of birth. So I could see right away that my pain was aligned with that feeling of guilt, of shame, of am I allowed to do this, you know? So that's what I mean when I was in my mind. So I was aware to see this happen and then to see the sensations change according to my mindset. So right away I started saying, I am allowed. And then I talked to myself out loud. And I said, you're allowed to do this. You're allowed to have a soft birth, an amazing birth. You're allowed, you're allowed, you're allowed. This can be great. This can be orgasmic. You're allowed, you're allowed, you're allowed, you're allowed. And by saying that, I just felt the power, my power, to just do whatever I want with the sensations. And then the waves would come and I would diffuse them from my uterus to the top of my head and to all the way to my toes. And I would say, for I don't know what reason, expansion, diffusion. So I was in this mantra of expansion, diffusion. Then the waves would just like, and then I would go back into this dizzy, sleepy state. And then whoop, another one would come. And I'm allowed. Expansion, diffusion, which is kind of funny, you know. My partner still like makes fun of me about this because it's just random. But it was helping me. It was my way to stay in this moment.
I kind of want to hear you say it in French.
Expansion, diffusion. So in French, I would say expansion, diffusion. Expansion, diffusion. And that's it. But the I'm allowed was in English. Because Yolan would say, thank you, God. And when I said that, it just made no sense for me in that moment. And then I had this situation, reflection with that friend, traumatizing birth. And then the I'm allowed came. So that was my mantra for the rest of the birth. And then at some point, my doula mind training came and was telling me, okay, well, if you want things to go, you need to move and to switch side or do something. But I didn't want to move. Everything just felt so good. So I just turned on the other side. And I stayed there and I just took the waves and I was just experiencing birth in a really soft way. Then at some point, the water just broke. Boop. And it was a really minimalist birth, so I had this pot to pee and poo, this pot to vomit, this bottle of water. I had a tissue blanket under me. I didn't want to have any plastic at that birth. I didn't want to have any plastic thing to take the blood and fluids. And I had this little padding, like a pad to absorb. What would be the word? So I had this pad that I would cover myself with because I didn't have any blanket near. And then at some point, the water broke. And then I was cold. There was not enough firewood in the stove. And it was October. Asla was born on October 7th. And at some point, I called my partner. I said, Gab, like, I need you to come. Like, and when he walked down the stairs, I couldn't handle myself. I wanted him to wipe me. I wanted him to light the candle. I wanted him to put the fire. Nothing was working, and I needed the full attention, but also the attention to the material. I was not centered in my birth anymore. I think I wanted him to be there, handle the situation, and then leave. But I also wanted him to like wipe me and take care of me. And I thought I had pooped on myself, but he was like, no, there's no poop. So, and then the pain was there. And now I know that's because he was present, and that's how we connect, you know? And that's how I get attention. So there's many things in this, and I feel like I could deconstruct this for hours and hours. But I feel it's really meaningful and important to share. Because when you go to a birth, either as a birth worker, or when you invite someone at your birth, you really need to consider how you're going to relate to them in pain and in the deepest moment of your life of giving birth.
Your story really makes sense in the way Yolanda would explain her orgasmic births, is that once she exited the present moment, the pain would return. And that's exactly what I heard when you said, once my partner was in the room, your attention was elsewhere. It was not on your body and your sensations. You left the presence with your own body and your sensations. And then it was on the attention on your partner or other things happening in the room. And that makes a lot of sense. Because being present with your own body is how you're alchemizing the pain to poof, being gone.
Yes, and I also think that was my way of being a victim in that moment. Of I need help. And, you know, it's like stepping away or stepping in this, I am a Wonder Woman and I can do it all by myself. But that's like, I didn't want that for the postnatal. I didn't want to do it all by myself and being a Wonder Woman and being exhausted again like I did for my first experience, you know? So I think it was this balancing. But I don't know. There's so many things that I'm still deconstructing and learning from this birth. So when he came, my son walked down the stairs and he said, oh, the baby's coming. And when he said that, I realized that the baby was actually coming now, but I didn't see it coming. You know, when I called my partner, it was just, I was cold. And I thought it was, this whole thing would still keep going for hours and hours and hours. And we would eventually call our doula for the morning to be with the kids and then my mom and then figure out. And then my son looked at me and I was like, oh my God, yes, 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 it's coming now. So I had one push and my stepdaughter really wanted to be present. I decided to call her. Poor little girl. I was like, Milan! She was sleeping. Like, but I was in my head. I was like, she wanted to be there. I want to give her that. I stepped into this mom savior, perfect stepmom identity, ego, and I called her, which probably just scared her more than anything else, you know, of being called in the middle of the night. I kept two pushes in, because I wanted her to be awake and to be present because that's what she wanted. So there was like one push. I realized that baby was coming. And then I called her twice. And then I just couldn't hold it anymore. So that's, I think, also really interesting of why I did that. But I think that could also be another full episode. And then Asla was just born. He just slid into life like this. Whoop. I was on my right side. No, left side. And he just like, poof, slid through my legs. That's it. As simple as that. No expectations. No fear. Allowing myself. Believing that I deserved it. And creating the environment for me to be comfortable to do that. It can be as simple as that.
I just love that you were laying down on your side. You're like, doula brain should move. Midwife brain should move. That's their advice.
I was a big preacher of oxytocin and movement and like intuitive, you know, it, staying with connected with the intuition, and you will know how to position yourself. And I was just laying down on my left side, and a bloop, he was just born.
Wow. So how many months ago was this?
Oslo is now 17 months old.
Okay.
I would say it took me a good 6 months to 8 months to really share the experience. It was really hard to integrate it and to own it in front of others. You don't have a lot to relate then. And then the guilt and the realization that I made some choices and you made some choices. But do I feel comfortable telling you that you made some choices and that you just experienced the consequences of those choices? That's hard to do. And we connect in with trauma and pain and victimhood. So how are you going to relate to others? So it's really isolating to do that. I mean, I did that. I created that on my own. But when you do that, you have people that will either stop talking about the birth in the moment. They're like in your house and they understand what you just did. And they just stop. They freeze. And then you have some people that are amazed, but in a really weird way. So it's, and there's like in-betweens of those two, but that makes it that you just don't talk about it. Now I'm taking my voice out, and I think this story needs to be heard, and I'm not special, as like, this is accessible to anyone. But even this feels hard to say. My ego is like, ooh. Can I really say that? Can I really own this? And then when you experience that, you realize that you also have power to everything else. On anything. And then you experience some really hard situation or conflicts, and you're like, oh, damn. I created that. And then you get into another space of shame or guilt. Or maybe not. And then you let go. But I understand why some women don't go that way. More than ever. And it's okay. I mean, it's a shift in identity. My partner was ready to receive the woman that I am today. Some partners may not. You might just want to change job and move and get divorced. And it's a big, big shift. But it's a great gift.
I have nothing to say. Because you brought me to tears there that your partner, I don't know what you said, but your partner was ready to receive like the new you, the new identity. And that's another aspect of partnership that isn't really talked about.
It's all intertwined. It's always opportunities for us to elevate. And sometimes we sabotage because it feels safer. And it might be safer because the consequences of elevating ourselves might be too uncomfortable and might be dangerous in a certain way. But that's all questions of perceptions, as I think you know. But now, more than ever, I feel deep respect for every choice. I do not believe that free birth or solo birth is for everyone. And it's okay. I'm here to do that, and that will take me somewhere else. And it's perfect. And now my challenge is to not just shut up and lower myself and just let the light be after this experience. And not only identify with this experience as well, because I could make a big story out of this and just work on this story, you know? I need to also let go of this story. And now that's what I want to do, is to leave space for other women and other families to have their own path. So see, right now I'm creating, instead of being like frustrated with the system, I'm creating what I wish I had, which is coaching one-on-one for questioning, thinking, reflecting, deprogramming, reprogramming in a really deep way. And I'm starting some circles. So in women, in-person circles, not in front of a screen. That feels really magical. That feels really good. I think we need space for this. And some online resources. And it feels good and also really scary to speak up. To speak out on this. On this subject. So sensitive subject of birth. And life and death, mostly.
If I was in Montreal, I would be at your circle. Because these are the types of conversations that my friends and I have in person. This is what I'm interested in. Like, this is how deep I am. This is how intensely conscious I am. This is why this conversation was so good. I don't know. I'm probably going to edit it to before this, unless you had anything else to say. I could end it wherever you just ended. Or if you feel like there's something more that you want to package up and say, like, one last thing, let me know what you feel.
There's one last thing I could say, but you can feel like you can edit it after if it doesn't feel right. I think that to step into this sharing of my story is a really great medicine. And I invite every woman to find a safe space to do so. And I want to thank you for holding this space and for your energy and time. It is more than ever necessary to speak out and to take action. And I think the fact that we allow what is happening in the system is really problematic. So something else is emerging. And personally, that's where I want to put my energy on. And I think you're a big actor in this part. So thank you, Leah.